Blog Talk Radio.
Today, we always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, hey, remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the Panthers are doing. That's what the Panthers are doing all over the world.
Fred.
Right about now, NWA borders in full effect. Judge Gray residing. In the case of NWA versus the police department, prosecuting attorneys are MC Rand, Ice Cube, and Easy Motherfucking E.
Order, order, order. Ice Cube, take the motherfucking stand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help your black ass?
You goddamn right.
Won't you tell everybody what the fuck you gotta say?
Police coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got his bag, cause I'm brown. And not the other color, so police think they have the authority to kill a minority. Fuck that shit, cause I ain't the one for a punk motherfucker with a badge and a gun to be beaten on. It's only jail, we can go toe to toe in the middle of a cell. Fucking with me, cause I'm a teenager with a little bit of gold and a pager. Searching my car, looking for the plotter. Thinking every nigga is selling narcotics. You'd rather see me in the pen than me and Lorenzo rolling in a Benzo. Be the police out of shape, and when I finish, bring the yellow tape to take off the scene of the slaughter. Still getting swole off bread and water. I don't know if they fags or what. Such a nigga down and grabbing his nuts. And on the other hand, without a gun, it can't get none. But don't let it be a black and a white one, cause they'll slam you down to the street top. Black police showing out for the white cop.
I never bet my DNA.
my heritage. All I'm inheriting, money and power, the maker emeritus. Tell me something, you motherfuckers can't tell me nothing. I'd rather die than to listen to you. My DNA not for imitation, but DNA an abomination. This how it is when you in the matrix, out your bullets, reaping what you're sowing, stacking up the footage, living on the go and sleeping in the pillar, sipping from a Grammy, walking in the building, diamond in the ceiling, marble on the floors, peaches out the window, peeking out the window, baby in the pool, Godfather goes, only Lord knows. I've been going hammer, dodging paparazzi, freaking through the cameras, eat it for a daughter's rock, wearing sandals, yoga on the Monday, stretches in the planet, watching all the snakes. Curving all the fakes, phone never owned, I don't camera stakes, I don't compromise, I just penetrate, sex, money, murder, these are the breaks, these are the times, level number 9, look up in the sky, tennis on the way, tennis on the way, tennis on the way, motherfucker, I got winners on the way, you ain't shit without a buddy on your belt, you ain't shit without a ticket on your plate, you ain't sick enough to put it on yourself, you ain't rich enough to hit the ladder skate, tell me when this shit gonna be my fate, gonna be a fate, gonna be a fate, gonna be a fate, teach to the world, let it rotate, sex, money, murder, IDA.
Marcus Garvey wanted to return African Americans to Africa to create a vibrant black nation, empowered through economic independence. Although some of his goals were controversial, his crusade would inspire leaders from Malcolm X to Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela.
Garvey was certainly a controversial figure, but the concepts that we now think of as black nationalism and black pride started with Garvey's pronouncement.
Marcus Mosiah Garvey was born in St. Anne's Bay, Jamaica, on August 17, 1887. Beginning as a printer's apprentice at 14, Garvey became a union organizer and later worked various jobs across Central America.
Marcus Garvey found wherever he went, black people of African heritage in particular were always on the lower stratification end of society. This had a profound impact on him. Particularly, his concern was for the uplift of African people globally.
In 1912, Garvey sailed to London, England, and took night courses at Birkbeck College. After working for a Pan-African newspaper, Garvey returned to Jamaica in 1914 and formed the United Negro Improvement Association, or UNIA.
The UNIA was about black self-determination. It was about galvanizing the ideas of black repatriation to the motherland, the continent of Africa. And it was extremely important in terms of getting black people to understand self-pride, pride in one's race.
Inspired by Booker T. Washington to raise funds and start his own school, Garvey came to the United States in 1916. And in 1918 began publishing the Negro World newspaper.
Garvey was extremely outspoken. He was, some people would say, almost bombastic. He wanted to take over Africa and had elected himself as president of Africa without consulting the Africans, unfortunately.
Determined to achieve economic independence for African Americans, Garvey launched the Negroes Factories Association in 1919. And a shipping company called the Black Star Line, which he planned to use to transport passengers back to Africa.
Garvey was a great organizer, but unfortunately not a great businessman. During the time that Garvey and the UNIA were trying to launch the Black Star Line, they solicited funds from investors for stock options through the mail. And this resulted later on in allegations of mail fraud, and Garvey was convicted and sent to prison.
After serving 5 years in prison, Garvey was deported. He eventually moved to London, and in 1938, he supported the Greater Liberia Act, created by known white supremacist, Senator Theodore Bilbo from Mississippi.
Marcus Garvey's association with Senator Bilbo is related more on a practical level rather than an intellectual like for each other. Marcus Garvey's attempt to help Africans in America leave and go to Africa fell in line with some aspects of KKK philosophy.
Garvey died in London on June 10, 1940. He was reinterred in Jamaica in 1964 and is hailed as Jamaica's first national hero and the prophet of the Rastafarian religion.
Although Garvey was a flawed leader, He's someone who is really important to the history of the Black radical tradition. He was probably one of the strongest voices of Black nationalism in history.
On April 12, 1967, at Tougaloo College on the outskirts of Jackson, Mississippi, Stokely Carmichael, who popularized the term Black Power, lashed out against the war in Vietnam. This speech followed just days after an appearance at Nashville, which prompted riots by students at Fisk and Tennessee A&I universities. 3 days after Tougaloo, Carmichael participated in mass rallies of anti-war supporters in New York and San Francisco. Born in Trinidad on July 29, 1941, Carmichael became an American citizen when his parents came to the U.S. and were naturalized. He was still in college in 1960 when the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, was formed. It was SNCC which organized the sit-ins in the South. In 1966, as its leader, Carmichael spent the year transforming the organization toward the concerns of Black college students. This speech, given to about 700 students, illustrates the clear division between traditional nonviolent civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King and the more militant leaders coming on the scene. Here the viewer can see Carmichael define America's racial problems. Note particularly his concern with semantics and his use of antithesis to contrast the black and white perspective. Also noteworthy, of course, is his ability to excite and motivate his audience. At one point, he leads the audience in a chant, which, though abbreviated on this tape, lasted 10 minutes. In all, the viewer can witness an example of confrontational rhetoric from the 60s, illustrated by the fiery Stokely Carmichael.
I'm trying to figure out which one belongs to the CIA. Nick? It was once one of the only places we could run to for safety when we started to work in Mississippi in 1961 and 62. So that it's sort of like coming home when we come back to Tougaloo. Now I want you to, before I begin, to take a look at all of the pressmen before you. You will notice that not one of them are black. The nerve tomorrow to call me a racist. Are you ready? But we understand how the honkies are. They don't recognize their own racism. I understand that I'm following the great white father, Bobby Kennedy. I understand last night he told you a couple of things, and I want to put some of them in perspective for you. When he said the world belongs to you, that comes from a great black man by the name of Frederick Douglass. He said the world belongs to you. Secondly, I understand that Bobby urged us to stand up and speak out against injustice. Well, we could tell him that we don't need anybody to tell us to stand up anymore. Not only are we going to stand up, we're going to right the wrongs of our people in this generation. Our generation has the memories of the unpunished murders of Swerney, Goodney, and of Medgar Evers. There are going to be no more unpunished murders. Telling you that the kids in Nashville started a riot. Number one, you ought to recognize it is not a riot, it is a rebellion. A rebellion. And number two, you ought to be proud of your black brothers and sisters at Fifth, because a honky cop touched one of them and they told him you got to touch all of us.
In a little tent, I've been running everything. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. It's been too hard to live it, but I'm not afraid to fight. I know nothing is up there.
Black power, black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned in to In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party, National Chairman Brother Nat Turner, your co-host and engineer for the night, National Minister of Communications, Sister Amina Oshun. Calling every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, at 845-277-9266. Again, that's 845-277-9266. This is the People's Radio, so you can press number one at any time to participate. Tonight's topic is the word on Palestine from a black perspective. I'm going to go ahead and open up the lines for our host, People's Political Party, National Chairman, Brother Nat Turner. Black power, black power. Can you hear me, comrade?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Right on, black power, comrade. Right on. We also will see all
Before you get into your bill, comrade, I just want to say happy belated birthday to Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. We're going to go ahead and pause a couple of seconds for Chairman Fred. I shake. Black power, comrade. You have the floor.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, we also say all power to the people. We believe that the power should always be in the hands of the people at all times. Other than that, it's a hijacking and at least the fascism on the part of a small hand full of rich, old white, patriarchal men who want to dominate not only the country and the people that they live in, but also want to dominate the earth, in particular this international greed for natural material resources around the world. More times than not, black and brown indigenous people. We use terms in the political perspective. You know, we don't just sling terms around loosely at all, period. We've come from a long line of politicized, politically conscious brothers and sisters who have sacrificed their lives, sacrificed their well-being in order for black people to at least have a little bit that we have today. A lot of us have gotten mistaken, terribly mistaken, to think that the struggle is over because the Europeans somehow, some kind of way, gave us these acts and whatnot, you know, allowed us to end their schools and universities and hospitals and you know, to sit on the front of the bus with them and eat at lunch kind of with them, and somehow, some kind of way, black people on the rise. We say it's clear bullshit, sheer camouflage, because in real time, out in these mean streets that some of us refer to little Occupy Cotton, a little Vietnam. But we want to have a take, a say, a view, or, you know, express our, you know, our sentiments and how we see this Palestinian situation. There's many ways, we can size this up, you know, but nothing happens out of a vacuum. Things don't just appear from out of nowhere. There's precedent to everything, point of origin, that if we can go back, then we can solve problems in order to be able to go forward. What done happened is, in so many ways, is, ruling class individuals, those who steer the state machinery, have somehow, some kind of way using media as a propaganda piece to present to the people the branches on the tree, and therefore bad apples that come from the branches on the tree. And so we say if the apples is bad, then not only is the branches bad, but we have to take a look at the whole tree itself. To go to the origin, or to go to the trunk of the tree, to the base of the tree, and understand the apples in order to understand why the apples are rotten on the tree. And if we come from that perspective, then we can look at the situation in Palestine and gather a conclusion that concludes the explanation that explained, like Chairman Fred would say. but, you know, we kind of get the sense, and I could be wrong, black people in this country have been so, I like to use this term, lobotomized in this movie, Total Recall, but and due to the various, ways that we struggle and seek to survive on a daily basis, a lot of us, we have time to even think about what's going on in Palestine, let alone even some of the issues that black people face here right in this country today. So we want to be a voice for our people as politicized conscious revolutionaries who understand things from a political perspective because of the political relationship that we have with the state, and which is extended on on an international scale from here to Africa, Latin America, and the black and brown indigenous people in Asia and the Pacific Islands and whatnot. So this thing in Palestine is obvious. The bastard child of something that was orchestrated 70-something years ago. And some of us catch selective amnesia. Some of us have to pretend that this is some type of thing that just started a few months ago with the attack on this, what they refer to as the kibbutz in Israel. It is only the reflection. It is only the reflection of 75 years of orchestrated violence. One side has gotten itself into the position, to legitimize itself, and therefore its form of violence is seen as freedom. Of a sort, a liberation even from what they refer to now as terrorism. But I don't think too many people would prefer getting into a conversation with those who understand that, because we would not allow these pundits to keep pushing the same narrative. Now, one perspective, black people can relate to what the Palestinian people are going through. Some would see Palestine or Gaza. A lot of us started understanding back in the 70s and the 80s was called the Gaza Strip, you know. And so we see the Gaza Strip as the world's largest concentration camp where those who have been placed inside a prescribed environment have no cards. In their hands, they hold no cards. The only cards that they hold in their hands sometimes are rocks in their struggle for what they believe is their liberation from an oppressive regime. And it's very interesting because when you go back to World War II, where you see the people who are now proponents of the bombardment through military means of annihilation, so-called annihilating or wiping out Hamas, which in essence is just no more than camouflage for the own purpose, for a purpose, strategy, objective, what was referred to as the Malthusian philosophy of politics, a name after some white boy named Thomas Malthus, who lived in the late 17th, early 18th century, somewhere around there, or the late 18th, early 19th century, somewhere in there. But anyway, he had declared after his so-called evaluation of population that the planet would somehow suffer from overpopulation, and that there must be some type of checks and balances, you know, with this so-called population, what was referred to under the Nixon administration, a population bomb. And so therefore, due to, again, you know, most of us were not, haven't been educated correctly. We've been miseducated. You know, there's need to know basis of certain topics or subjects, certain things that are brought up for discussion by those who have made themselves the leaders. They haven't been chosen as a leader. They've made themselves as the leaders and have used certain things as a proxy to appear to the people as leaders. But anyway, so here you have this European talking about this population thing. And y'all bear with me, that's a whole lot. I'm going to try to, you know, cover as much as I can. And like the queen said, anybody wanting, you know, question timing, you know, just press the one on your phone and we'll, you know, we'll get you on and stuff. But, you know, we're just trying to lay down a, some kind of groundwork here because it's a things, if you will, to, you know, to gauge this, the thing that's taking place. But I just wanted to touch on the genocide factor of it as a form of population reduction on the part of the minority Europeans and their objective goals of so-called slowing down the non-white population of the world. Now, the Arabic-speaking people are not seen as whites, even though some of them, you know, are pale-skinned complected. A lot of them are pale-skinned complected persons and stuff, but they're not seen as whites. They're seen as non-whites due to a particular type of culture, or the geographical situation and whatnot, religion, being Muslims and stuff like that, as opposed to a Judeo-Christian. But that is one of the objective goals that is being carried out in Gaza, using Hamas as the legitimate excuse to annihilate the Palestinian people, or bomb them into the Stone Age, or you know, send them into oblivion. And so because it's very clear when you go back and you look at what they, the claims that they were making about, you know, these atrocities that had been taking place, you know, once they stormed the kibbutz and they beheaded, you know, babies and what. And they could not substantiate their stories. The BBC, The Guardian, some of these other sometime newspaper, news organs, you know, were requesting, evidence, or can they, you know, like I say, validate the stories. And if you listen to the Israeli military generals, these killers, explain, one of them even so arrogant about saying, well, we don't have to prove anything. We don't have to provide you with anything. It happened, you know. So there's a certain type of madness that always goes on when a war starts. When the retaliator, who has been more times than not the Goliath going up against a David, the first victim of war, the first victim or first casualty of war is the truth. You see what I'm saying? And so they were able to use their various media sources, their own pretty much, so all the national news stations and whatnot, CNNs of the world and the Foxes, MSNBCs and so forth, you know, due to the power relation that they have with the rest of the people, but they've gotten themselves in a position of power. And so that is the first order of business besides going in and cutting out the water and cutting out the electricity. which of course, again, is a war strategy. And these types of things that they've learned from those that come before them who had been so-called military geniuses or military philosophers or military experts and stuff. There's some, I believe it was a German named Clausewitz, and he had wrote this book called On War. So these are strategies and tactics that they use. But that is one aspect of it, to have the opportunity to not only increase their holdings with these land grabs that is supposedly against the international law, what they refer to as the United Nations, which formerly had been called the League of Nations. But around 1916, there was some European cat, some Brit in London, who was the, I think, the war secretary, secretary of war, something like that, whatever, named Arthur Balfour. And Arthur Balfour had gotten around to this notion and wasn't by itself. We have to, again, clearly understand the whole aspect of it. Arthur Balfour was pretty much the face of it in a sense, you know, drafts a declaration, a letter that he had actually written to another rich ruling class white man named, referred to as Lord Rothschild. And that family that has had his hands in many ventures with war as a racket, war being, you know, a profit. As General Smith D. Butler said, you know, 100 years ago, 70, 800 years ago. But he had written this this intent, letter of intent or whatever, and he had, you know, to Lord Rothschild, and I would try to see if I can get my hands on copy of it, because I want to actually try to read it, you know, just to give an idea of his sentiments. Basically, that they that the British would seek or believe that the Jewish people would have a homeland, so-called right to a particular homeland and whatnot. And the first idea, as a matter of fact, you know, for this this what would eventually, you know, basically a land grab, was Africa. As a matter of fact, you know, Africa had I believe been looked at first as an idea of establishing a Jewish homeland for the you know, people who are referred to as Jewish, and we're gonna get into that too, because one thing we don't do, People's Political Party, again, we're very careful about the terminology that we use. With us, you know, being descendants of African people, we see, you know, whatever white man that is that's committing these crimes against humanity, against us and our people, we see him as that. We don't see him as Catholic. We don't see him as Protestant or Presbyterian, Methodist, or Calvinist, or whatever, or Jew. We see him as a European, as a white man. There are atheist whites, there are Catholic whites, Presbyterian whites, and so forth, these various branches of the Catholic or Christian sects, you know, and whatnot. And so we don't see white Jewish people any different. Some of us don't even have an idea to understand what Jewish is. We don't even know what Jew is. You know what I'm saying? Some of us even go further to the point where we talk about, you know, where they, how have they been Jews when the letter J ain't but, you know, X amount of centuries old and stuff like that. But we see this as a struggle between the group that is considered as the non-whites, non-white Judeo-Christians who have been opposed by the white faction that refers to itself as Jewish. Being the descendants of the white people who had come out of someplace or Eastern Europe or whatnot. You know, that's pretty much how we see it. You know, but I want to read this now for declaration for those who are not familiar with it. I thought it would be fitting to do it, just to, you know, give a what they say, like from the horse's mouth. This is a letter where it says, "Dear Lord Rothschild." This letter to Lord Rothschild by the British Foreign Secretary Arthur James Balfour was aimed at Jewish support for the Allies in the First World War. The letter, known as the Balfour Declaration, became the basis movement to create a Jewish state in Palestine. The letter was published a week later in the Times of London. Foreign Office, November 2nd, 1917, it says, "Dear Lord Rothschild, I have much pleasure in conveying to you on behalf of His Majesty's government," the nerve, you know, "the following declaration of sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations, which has been submitted to and approved by the cabinet. His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. I should be grateful if you would bring this declaration to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation. Yours, Arthur James Balfour." Now, if you read, you know, or if you take this letter and dissect it, you know, line by line, you can, you know, decipher the subtle language in the letter. You know, on one end, he's talking about going in, removing them by force. And then on the other end, double speaking and double talking, speaking with forked tongue, talking about not violating their civil and religious rights. It is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. You know, one would have to really, really be mentally incapable, you know, mentally unstable to buy into this double talking. And this is what the Europeans have been doing for centuries. This is a Hegelian strategy, a Machiavellian tactic to use against those who it seek, whom they seek to subject. Now, during this early period, if you look at Palestine, you look at a map, and like I said, you know, it's so much. When you look at the Bible, you see, you know, the word Israel, I heard you say, would have been those who have studied this, maybe even more in depth than I have. I have said you can't look on a map anywhere before a certain time and find a country or a place called Israel, you know. And so it's a concoction on the part of those who are in control of the propaganda apparatuses of the state. And that includes being in control of publications, you know, literature, books, and print and stuff like that. Even so much so, you know, being in control of the Bible, you know, how they tweak the Bible in certain ways to make it fit the narrative and stuff, you know. But that letter there itself is a farce. Now, the question is, how does one make himself, which at the time there may have been, what, 5 billion people somewhere at the time, and how does one man make himself the decider of whether or not one particular group of people should be moved out of a particular territory, and then another group of people brought in and say, "Here, this is, you know, your land of milk and honey," as the Bible describes and whatnot, you know. But it's a very incredible thing that one man was able to establish this, lay down the groundwork. Now, when he talks about Lord Rothschild, who was actually, you know, the head of the World Zionist Federation and what have you. Now, many of us have no idea of what Zionism is. We know that the end part of the word, the ism part of the word, we're familiar with that through the word racism. You know, those who are conscious in the class struggle know it as classism. You see what I'm saying? But this Zionist thing, you know, how many of us can say that we have an idea of what this is? There's a book some years ago, when I was younger, trying to understand all these isms, it was something that caught my attention. Very interesting, as a matter of fact, who the authors are, by the way. But it's a book called Essential Papers on Zionism, thick book. It's a very thick book. It's about a 2-inch book, a little over 2 inches. And the interesting part is that the authors go into what Zionism is. And the authors were white Jewish people, Yehuda Reinhardt and Anita Shapiro. It was edited by them. Now, there's a whole lot of, I guess, what would be essays and whatnot, that if you read, you read the book and you will see their take on Zionism. And to me, it doesn't appear to be too friendly of a take. So what I'm saying is that these persons had themselves written a objective sort of position against Zionism. Zionism becoming a philosophy began, or its early brainchild being Theodore Herzl, and a couple of other white Jewish aristocrats, and so they had developed this idea of Zionism, which had become a sort of backdrop for what is known in certain circles as Jewish nationalism. We have no problem with nationalism because we are black nationalists. Nationalism is a natural thing by the simple fact that if you take Africa, look at all the different groups in Africa, and you will see, nationalism is, the Zulu people, the Yoruba-speaking people, the Igbo-speaking people, and so forth. The tribal nationalism, which on the whole is sort of a checks and balances by what would be confederated states, which is a concept that the Africans have always been in possession of since we can remember. This Zionism thing has taken advantage of the nationalist idea and had become no more, no less than the same strategy and tactic that had been used in this fictitious place they refer to as South Africa, the apartheid system. You could take the Zionist system and the apartheid system and apply them to the two groups of people. You'd end up with pretty much the same results. In Southern Africa, referred to as apartheid, and the same similar strategy and tactic that the Europeans have been using. There's the same similar strategy and tactic that the Europeans have been using in Palestine. Or if you go to India, you'll find the same strategy and tactic under what's referred to as the caste system. You'll see the same strategy and tactic there, where the people end up in a certain position, so much so that in India, the people there are the dark-skinned population referred to as untouchables, the Dalit people. And this word untouchable is actually a literal reference to one particular group of people that those on the top in the hierarchy, it's forbidden to even shake one's hand. It's forbidden. There's an incredible types of psychology here. It's a power relationship. And, of course, in the American South in the 50s and 60s, you had the Jim Crow system. It was the same strategy in Texas. the hurting of a particular type of people into a particular type of environment, and once you get them in that position, they're pretty much totally vulnerable. And so the only other thing that they would naturally resort to is rebellion, which would lead to revolution. George Washington had the audacity to claim that King George was a tyrant and that these good white Americans were suffering from tyranny under the crown. And what did they do? They declared their independence from the same tyranny that his descendants now today is practicing against the people in Palestine. You see what I'm saying? The same strategy and tactic that they're using there. It's even 100 times even worse due to the increase in the advances of science and technology, using an Air Force, air bombardment campaign, and again, using Hamas as the Machiavellian strategy to practice their real and ulterior means and goals and objectives. Be total annihilation of a group. Using Hamas as the scapegoat in order to be able to pull it off. Now, there's some old maps that I've seen. Somebody actually have been posting these maps where they do a comparative analysis between the old maps. I would say probably spanning 100 years. This geographical boundary location of what is Palestine, and this creation of this place called Gaza and the Gaza Strip, and how the encroachments over 80 years, you know, 800 years, how this the geographical boundaries of the Palestinian people has shrunk, exponentially. You know, you can take 100 people and fit them in 10 feet of space. You can take 10 people and fit them in 100 feet of space with no problem. You know, and with room to spare. But you would have a problem if you took 100 people and tried to place them in 10 feet of space. You know, it doesn't require the professor at MIT to get us to understand this. And of course, in that situation, other things arise from that. You know, the situation, the living situation, the economic situation of a people who have been herded off into a prescribed area. Now, this strategy and idea, believe it or not, has been sort of observed with the cattle ranches, where, you know, the cattle rancher has, you know, a couple of hundred cows, and of course, you know, he keeps the cows, which is his herd. Now, when the cattle rancher has to move the cattle out to, you know, to clean the area or whatever, you know, from time to time, he gets his, one of his overseers on a horse with a shotgun, he gets in the back and they open up a certain particular area, and the whole herd, from the reaction of the sounds of the shotgun, they move in a desired manner. This is what you call the herd effect. And this is what this is. The herd effect, using a strategy against the Palestinian people there. Now, as I said, you know, 1917, and so some people have said, well, you know, this just didn't start a month or something ago. You know, it began 75 years ago. Now, it doesn't take a genius again to understand that when you a man enters your home and takes over your home, takes over your family, it's only a natural response. It's a natural response. It's nothing abnormal, but it's nothing out of the ordinary, in conflict with nature, that person would seek to liberate his family from this invader who began the minute he kicked in the door. The terrorism began the minute he kicked in the door, because the family had come under his terror. Now, this will never be talked about or put into this type of perspective, like talking about it on Anderson Cooper's 360, Wolf Blitzer situation. And I believe Wolf Blitzer is a white Jew descendant from a German background, you know. But even Fox, You know, you see these propaganda machines, corporate control propaganda machines appear to be adversaries when it comes to Republican Democrats. Well, you take the Fox News, which opposes CNN. In other words, they have the masses of the people believing that Anderson Cooper and Sean, whatever his name is. But anyway, you have these two individuals who appear to be opposing ideological political enemies. One minute that Fox is taking a clip from CNN and talking about how CNN is shooting propaganda and fake news and whatnot, and then you see CNN goes back and they take something, a clip from Fox, and then put it on CNN and they spin that shit and say they fake news and whatnot. And it doesn't occur to us, it doesn't occur to the people that they ain't on the same strategy, on the same game together. And this is how you keep people in constant static. If you keep people in constant static, then how can they liberate themselves? How can they come around to understanding that, realizing that we all in the same boat to a certain degree? Because the enemy of my enemy is my friend and always true all the time. You see what I'm saying? But the point is that when it comes to Israel, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, they're all on the side of the so-called Israelis. And of course, you know, the CEOs, the proprietors, the stockholders, the owners, whatever, you know, a lot of them are white Jewish people who own a lot of media. And so therefore, it's only natural that they will use their media platform to put their part of the narrative in play. Now, you can tell a lie, you know, you can say something to a million people, you know, and repetitively, and they'll eventually believe the lie, you see. And the good guy who has been twisted into the terrorist will have a time of it trying to undo the damage or the lie that's been put out against him. And this is a similar strategy that they're using, that was used on the Black Panther Party back in the 60s during the infamous counterintelligence program ran by J. Edgar Hoover, the leader of the FBI. Smear campaign, referred to as badjacking and whatnot. So due to the lack thereof, the Palestinian people, those who have had their humanity stripped from them, have had to struggle with the so-called West, Western media propaganda. Now, since the bombardment of Gaza, there's been these series of protests, mass rallies and protests around the country in various forms, on college campuses and whatnot. It appears that most of the protest, or you would gather the notion and the perception that these protests have been pro-Palestinian protests. And so what the Europeans have done, what the Judeo-Christian faction has done to sort of combat that as a countermeasure is make these commercials, make these very subtle commercials. This is where I want black people to understand. This is where I want black people to understand this shit right here. In so many ways, you know, it's okay. Well, everybody got to choose a side. There's no neutrality. Everybody choose a side. All right. Since black people have been pretty much the chief receivers of the worst type of treatment, next to the black and brown indigenous people that we see it from the top of Canada to the bottom of Chile, then it's coming on the media propaganda experts to direct some of that in such a subtle way at black people to so-called win the hearts and minds of black people. Now, there's this commercial where it starts off talking about anti-Semitism and whatnot, and they show this, you know, they're using, you know, again, you know, they own all the footage, they own all the, you know, whatever the copyright, they can show whatever they want, clip whatever they want, do whatever they want with. than some media strategists, comes up with the corporate line or the fascist line to use all the persuasion. Well, some of us not know social engineering, but this commercial starts off. You think it was just based on anti-Semitism, the treatment of Jewish people and whatnot, and what happened at the kibbutz, as though nothing ever happened in Gaza. For instance, the cold-blooded murder. Of a female journalist, cold blooded murder. No consequence, no nothing. You see what I'm saying? Zero. You see, but the commercial starts off with this the anti-Semitism thing, and then it spins off into other anti that, and the cold part about it, man, this is so Hegelian. This is so again. The cold part about it is that they also enter hatred against Arabs. We must fight against all hate. It's absolutely amazing to see them string this commercial together. And you see right there in the middle of it, who you see? Black people, where it says racism. And that's designed to do what? It's designed, to throw you into disarray. If we can't win you over to our side, we'll throw you into disarray and confusion. You see, and that's the subtle message behind the whole commercial. Now, these Israeli generals, whatever, these killers or whatnot, the IDK, whatever they call themselves, we can say that's like the middle portion of it, so to speak, where he's spinning these narratives, even on CNN, we're talking about, and Netanyahu, where he talks about, when it comes to what the world thinks, he says that the world is with us, and of course, the same strategy and tactic that was used against the so-called Indians, when Hollywood made these black and white movies, and they always showed the Indians attacking the cowboys, but they never showed the cowboys what they were doing to the Indians in the first place. Because I remember that when I was a little boy, I used to watch these cowboys and Indian movies. I remember my grandfather used to watch them in the country. We'd sit there and you watch these movies and you see it. Because, we was little boys, some of us wanted the holster with the little guns, some of us wanted that for Christmas, we wanted the little holster with the little guns and stuff. And, there's a movie called Lord of War. And there's a scene in there where Nicolas Cage is actually playing a real dude who was shuttling weapons all over the planet, right? And he come home and his son had a little toy gun. And this is what he's doing. And he was like, it's something about that has struck him, made him realize, well, man, it just hit home, my son got a toy gun. And this is what I've been doing. I've been, making money selling weapons, to both sides, regardless of who fight, you see. But the whole point, like they would make these movies, you'd never know what the cowboys had done. And so I used to sit there all the time and be like, get him. They'll show the heroic, part where the Indian is coming over the wall. He's all busy, he gets shot up at the last second. He's getting ready to swing his hatchet, and he gets shot, And we never knew. We never knew the other side. So it's the same strategy, same tactic. So what they refer to as Hamas, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, all these other groups as terrorists, is no more than just an updated version of what they're referring to as the so-called Indians. It's savages. It's an updated version. It's a more scientific updated version. It's the same strategy, same tactic that we use then. It's the same strategy tactic that they use today. And again, McDonald's have jingles. Sprite have a line, have it your way, and whatnot. We know these little jingles, it's so ingrained in our mind. We don't struggle with them. You see what I'm saying? We don't struggle with them at all. And so it's the same thing. So if you constantly, repetitively, and just keep saying terrorism, the beguiled masses of the people. The unsuspecting masses of the people will internalize the same propaganda. And this is why you see people going right now. Well, yeah, those terrorists did this. The terror attacks on 9/11. The terrorist attacks on 9/11. And if you pay attention to the news for all the stations, again, Sean Hannity, that's his name, Sean Hannity, Anderson Cooper, Will Blissom, Rachel Maddow, whatever, regardless of their political entanglements, they all must use the word terrorist. They all must use any anchor on their ship from sunup to sundown got to use the word terrorist. You know, let one of them not use the word terrorist when it's their turn to be the anchor, and you watch and see they get reprimanded. You watch, some of them might get fired. You see the little young girl on CNN. They got these little new little sisters that they bringing in, right? You know, to make black people feel like, you know, give us up every now and again. You know, murder on us, and then you give us some concessions, right? So these sort of concessions. So what you do? We're going to bring these new girls in, but they're going to be black. We're 2, 3, 4, 5 of them in here. So they got the little younger. Her last name, I think, is Phillip or something. The little younger, even when she's talking about it, even when she's talking about the pay, you can look on her face and see. You can look on her face and see. The times when they was forced to show some of the shit in Gaza, because you got Al Jazeera News. Online, you know, independent Al Jazeera News, right? You got other independent alternative media, and some right on time. You know, my hat go off to them. So here you got these pretty much unknown alternative media, right, sets where you have to go online to see it. You just flick your TV on, you see CNN and Fox and NBC all day, every day. So it was a matter of time. They were forced to show some of the stuff in Gaza because some of the Al Jazeera was showing it and all those other people were showing the footage. So they was forced to show some. So in those times when they were showing, you can look in this little girl's face and see. You can see the fact that she know what she reading on that teleprompter ain't necessarily the truth. You see, so now she got a decision to make. Now, we all at some point in time in our lives get tested where we'll make a material decision or a moral decision. And, of course, due to power relationship with the state and black people, most of us are going to make a material decision because, after all, we got to eat. But at the same time, during the 50s and the 60s, a lot of our people they made sacrifices. They made a moral decision. They made a moral decision. So there's no excuse. It's just at a point in time, you never know when you get dialed up, when it's your turn. You see what I'm saying? But you can look at her face. Abby Phillip, I think, is her name. But you can look at her face and see when they have a all the white Jewish, intellectuals and philosophers and, you know, this thing like what black people was referred to as a tale of the tent, Du Bois and the gang. Well, you know, when they get their, you know, their pro-Palestinian, their pro-Israeli pundits on TV, and you see this huge imbalance. You see this huge lopsided imbalance where they don't bring on, Palestinian thinkers. You know, every group has a Malcolm X. Every group has a Malcolm X or a potential Malcolm X. So it's nowhere in the world they would ever do that unless they could handle them some kind of way. You know, now what they will do is they'll get somebody who they know that's a respectable person, like the Europeans did in the 50s and 60s, where they brought on respectable Negroes who would speak in favor of the state, even though they knew that what the state was doing to their people, you know, even though they knew that it was terribly wrong. It was terribly wrong. But this is what they'll do. This is what they'll do. So they'll spin this narrative. And so if you keep saying terrorists and terrorists, everybody's going to end up saying it. I'll give you another classic example of how it works. The hurricane that happened in Louisiana, referred to as Katrina. Somebody was sitting in the weather room and whatnot, going through a Rolodex of names who just so happened to be female names, okay? And they were just going through these Rolodex names, and they just came across, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. Well, the one before, they had to have been a J or something. Well, so to my understanding, you know, they go like in an alphabetical order, they come on. So somebody chose the name Katrina to label this hurricane. Now there's 7 billion people, 8 billion people on this planet. Okay, now for one person to label this hurricane, and then it spread around the world, Everybody's saying Katrina. So what those of us who are politically conscious, you know, from a revolutionary perspective, we refer to it as Hurricane America. We refer to it as Hurricane America. Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. With the Black Panther Party Cubs referred to it as Hurricane America. And we say, yeah, right on. We see it as Hurricane America. But the point is that somebody can do the labeling and the naming around the rest of the country and outside the country. You know, that's a pretty powerful thing to do. That's a pretty a heavy thing to do from a psychological perspective. Now, there's these certain group of people who study left brain, right brain, and I'm taking, look, man, no holds barred political education set tonight, period. You know, we believe in going into intricacies so that people can really, really, really see what's going on. Most of this shit is psychological. Most of it is psychological. So we're just talking about how is it that the Palestinian people have become the terrorists and that the white Jewish people have become, you know, this persons or these people who have been persecuted for 2,000 years. You see, and so, again, and let's be very clear on this. I stated this earlier. The Zionist faction of the white Jewish population, in their own way, have used the white Jewish population themselves as shields, as buffers. The same way that the Zionists are accusing Hamas of using the Palestinian peoples as shields. It's the only reason. They don't care about their own people. Well, we know that Theodore Herzl and all the rest, David Ben Gurion and all these other people, we know from a certain perspective, World War One, World War Two, we know that they didn't really care in a certain perspective in their own right, in their own way. You see what I'm saying? So it comes time to period where they can stick these people in the middle and the rest of the world. And so look what's happening, to the Jews, to the Jews again. And people make this historical link for over 2,000 years. And then you got certain brothers, sisters, belonging to certain sets and groups and whatnot. And so, well, look, we're not the original Jews in the first place. The original Hebrews were the black people. You see, so it's a whole combination of things, you know. But when you talk about a democracy, and this is what America is good at. Well, I can refer to it as the Anglo-American establishment. As a matter of fact, the book called Anglo-American Establishment, excellent book, actually written by somebody who was actually on the inside with them, the power brokers named Carol Quigley, who, by the way, was Bill Clinton's instructor at Georgetown when he was in college, being molded and shaped, for the empire, you know, to do his bid when he was president. But anyway, what they do is, you know, study certain things. You know, they'll study certain things, the left, right brand and whatnot, and figure out how they could pull these things off. 9/11 was a classic example. It's a classic example. And we could never let anybody engage us in any form of conversation as People's Political Party and some kind of bullshit conversation and get us to go along with some narrative that we haven't even taken a look at, that we can pull apart and see if it can hold water, is what I'm telling you here. But that's the whole thing. Now, America is good at that. America, again, the Anglo-American establishment. And so to claim democracy, you know, look, let me go back. All right, they put after World War One. And then you have World War II, right? They put this thing called the League of Nations together, right? Again, it was nothing but a handful of imperialist, land-grabbing white men, okay? World War One, World War II was no more nor less than a division of the spoils. Let me say that again. This is where the word booty comes from, okay? It was no more, no less than a division or dividing up of the earth between two factions, between two sets. Okay, the Russians claimed to be allies with the Americans, and that the Germans were the enemies at the time, right? Right after when that war was over, it didn't take them too long. After that war was over, it set up the League of Nations. And to my understanding, the American faction didn't really approve of the League of Nations, I guess because of certain their little so-called bylaws and whatnot was written in a way that wasn't totally satisfactory to them. So they revised it, revamped it, and then renamed it, called the United Nations. And so now it fit their agenda. It fit their, what, imperial ambitions. Because the Brits were already doing it. They'd already had colonies around the world. They'd already had colonies. Okay? So they was already doing it. So they claimed they were setting up some so-called august body. I believe Geneva, Switzerland was the headquarters, something like that, based on whatnot. And they set up all these international laws and human rights laws and, you know, put them in codes and whatnot. If you did, this was a violation of human rights and whatnot, and made themselves the quintessential example of democracy, right? And they will forever be hypocrites. It's no way in the world. Look, we could just end all this shit so it could never be justice on stolen land. It can never be justice on stolen land. Anyway, right? So you just give them concessions. So you create something to make them feel like they belong. This is why you see the nations, the non-white nations in the UN, and particularly the African nations. And you see now some of the African nations or some of the leaders are now starting to get some balls and starting to stand up as men, right? But anyway, so they set the UN up, and what other thing was it but just a camouflage for who? The Anglo-American establishment. And then you throw in the Germans, and you throw in the French. Now, what do the Germans and French, what do they all have in common? Imperialism. It's the same thing. So in the meantime, the Russians become the enemy. They become the enemy. The Cold War, they become the enemy. Now, one Alan Dulles, who at the time was, we can say, you know, it wasn't the CIA, it was the OSS, which the CIA came out of the OSS, right? Office of Strategic Services. Alan Dulles went and told these handful of individuals that we're fighting on the wrong side. I can't make this shit up. This is documented. Alan Dulles went and told them we're fighting on the wrong side. So what did he mean by that? What did he mean by that? That they were fighting on the wrong side. They were fighting on the wrong side so much so that the Germans became their friends. Not only did the Germans become their friends, but the scientists the Germans had that was under Hitler, right? The German scientists under Hitler went to work for him. Called Operation Paperclip. I can't make this up. As a matter of fact, I believe she's a white Jewish woman, Annie Jacobson. Wrote a book about it. Excellent book. Well researched. So how could the Germans have been the enemies and then all of a sudden the same scientists, the same madmen, the same, that movie's a James Bond movie, I can't think, but you see what I'm saying? Like even my mind, been conditioned. These names are, movies would just pop up, right? Well, anyway, how could the Germans have been the enemy and they were doing these terrible things to the white Jewish people in the concentration camps, and the same scientists who were doing these horrible things end up going to work for them at NASA? How could that be? How could that possibly be? Where were they at then? Where were Theodore Herzl and David Ben-Gurion? Where were they at then? Where were they at then? To my understanding, Henry Kissinger was sent on this mission to hunt him down and whatnot when he was young. You know, recently, you know, the pig just died. Right? But how could that be? And then the Germans become their friends and the Russians become the enemy. This is why things are the way they are. It's why the understanding, the way they are. As a matter of fact, it's called trading with the enemy. trading within. And you're saying, why am I saying all this? I'm saying all this for a reason. Saying, go to show you how it works. You know, how they can take a situation and betray one group of people and they can win, you know, my hearts and minds of the people. And again, let's be clear. Let's be very clear. There are even some white Orthodox Jews in Israel who anti-Israel, who anti-imperialists. You know, do they get accused of anti-Semitism? This book that I talked about, the authors are white Jewish people writing about Zionism, breaking it down. Would they get accused of anti-Semitism? Would they get accused of anti-Semitism? Now, as a power relationship, this is why you have a lot of people won't even whisper in their breath. They talk about it closed doors, you know. But even so much as a whisper, why not? Because of power relationship. You see some of these, my head go off to some of these individuals, and, you know, I think most of them white, not all of them, you know, spoke out against the occupation, right? And they've been fired. Shit been going on over there. London, Britain sitting on a pot of cake. Great Britain sitting on a pot of cake. All this shit is sitting on a pot of cake. You see? And this is why we wanted to do the show from a black perspective, to give you understand the idea. You know, this is the kind of time we got here. All right. But yeah, so create themselves as a democracy and have all these laws and then tell you what international law is. And you look at what's going on. They've broken every last one of them. They're accused of Slobodan Milosevic, war crimes, went and kidnapped him, brought him before the world court. Charged Saddam Hussein, human rights violation, war crimes, kidnapped him, brought him before the world court, sends him to death. I think Slobodan too. And let turn him back over to the Iraqi people and let them decide how they want to kill him. Right? And you hear you see all these, now again, these independent news outlets, great work. And they're clearly pointing out human rights violations going on in Gaza. Right? And again, the pro-Israeli propaganda machine was only forced to talk about these bombs at these hospitals because the alternative news media was all over it, and Al Jazeera was all over. So they were forced to talk about it. So what did they do? They had to come up with a countermeasure. And so Hamas is using it as a, you know, whatnot. And so they go to that one hospital, right? They go there. And they bring the camera crew and they do all this shit. Now, I've been around long enough to know that I couldn't trust nothing they say, even if it's the truth. You know, we've seen them plant many a times, many things before. many times before they've done. You know, but even their own sources can't even verify the story. You see what I'm saying? Hardly any of them, from the beheadings to babies to these claims, right? So the question is, if Netanyahu's the leader, like Saddam was in Iraq, Slobodan was over there in Yugoslavia, whatever it was, right? If he's the leader and they was the leader, then the question is, who going to kidnap Netanyahu and bring him before the war court if you know, he's committed war crimes? Or we wait when the war is over. Then the charges got to be left. Okay, well, we'll wait for that then. We'll wait for that. The whole point is the UN is bullshit. It's simply a mechanism to use against 9 white Anglo-Saxon Protestant people. to a certain degree. And what you do is you put 9 whites in there too, so it won't be so obvious that these are all white nations. But the kicker is this G shit. 1 minute is G9, G7, G8, back and forth, 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 back and forth. What is that? It's no more, no less than the representation of worldwide white supremacy. Even when they got mad with the French, because the French wasn't one of the willing to go over there and bomb the Iraqi people in the Stone Age, all these people over in America started talking all that shit, and it stopped calling it the French fry, started calling it the freedom fry. But look at them, they're together, ain't they? They together. And that's what you see. And that's what you see. Henry Kissinger, a white man, who some say was Jewish. He wrote up what's called a Memorandum 200, out of Memorandum 300. Or 200 is one of those. And Memorandum 46. Right? Go read them. Go read the Memorandum 300. Go read it. Go read it. And that was directed at the people of Africa, at the continent of Africa, continental Africa. Go read it. It is a manual to practice genocide against 9 whites in Africa. Now, there's more tools in philosophy that I mentioned earlier. See, we're putting the Palestine thing in what we feel is a proper perspective in order to understand what's going on right now with it. Because we need the people's conscious levels to raise up. So we bring the contradictions to the surface and the highest of people's consciousness, just like G.T. Newton had come to understand and realize, like Chairman Fred had come to understand and realize, you know, the leader of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. And so this thing, this idea to practice genocide, while on the flip side of that is the move in under the pretenses of liberation from terrorism to control the natural resources. Because of their imperial ambitions, because of their materialist ambitions. Man, so much. Hey, due to their ambitions. Now, there's something I ran across a while back. Something called the Samson plan. Now, I don't know how authentic this plan is or how genuine or how, whatever. But the objective from what's being gathered is an expansion of the Israeli state into larger sectors, which is referred to as West Asia. The Europeans, which have always been in the business of renaming lands, which they renamed as the Near East or the Middle East. And we start saying, well, there's a Near East, and there must be a Far East, and there's a Far East, there must be a Far West Asia. So where is it? But anyway, you have Lebanon, Syria up in the north. You got Jordan, South, Arabia, East, and whatnot, right, that surround Palestine, and of course, is lies up against the Mediterranean Sea, the corridor of the Mediterranean Sea. And in geopolitics, in the international realm of geopolitics, when you look at it from the perspective of what imperialism is and how imperialism functions and operates, you can see the setting up of Israel as a satellite for the West imperialist ambitions. Now, there's been many studies. I remember growing up a few times where I would hear somebody would say, study geology, geography, you know, study geography. And I understand what they mean now, study geography. The imperial ambitions to dominate the resources of the earth. It's a book, matter of fact, it's two of them. One is called Grand Chessboard by, let me see if I can see his name right, it's a big new Brzezinski. Right now, who is this figure? This is one of the brain trusts behind the establishment, was called the Trilateral Commission. Right? And as I said, Alan Dulles had said that they were fighting on the wrong side. The bombing of Pearl Harbor, right? America got entered into the war, the Japanese kamikaze and whatnot. We're supposed to be the enemy. Years later, the Japanese become allies of the Anglo-American establishment, which is why it's called the Trilateral Commission, because tri is just a word for three. So you got America, Britain, and Japan that formed the Trilateral Commission. Now, the brain trust behind that was Henry Kissinger, as Zbigniew Brzezinski, around 1973. And they set that up for future consideration, for future purposes, which is why you had the shit going on over there with Russia, Ukraine, Japan, China, Taiwan. It's another power to take at any moment. There's a whole geographical, strategical chessboard thing that's going on. This is why the book called Grand Chessboard was written. And what is the prize? Whoever can control the Eurasiatic plate or dominate Eurasia. Eurasia is no more, no less than the one geographical landmass that stretches from West Europe, Asia, and the Russians sit right in the middle of it. Russia, rather. That was the whole point of them breaking up the USSR. That's the whole point of doing it. He said, what this got to do with things going on in Palestine? It's a game of chess. They need to be there because that gives them an eye in West Asia, and it gives them a reason to go there whenever they need to. That's a whole Machiavellian strategy. For those of you who dare, we read The Prince for Machiavelli. It's right in there. And this is what, I'm going to say it like this. This is what the poor Palestinian people don't understand. But they know one thing, that they're in a fight for their existence. And you see again, America claimed to be a democracy and civilized. All the European nations claim to be civilized nations, civilization. And you see the Palestinian women. And you see even some of the Palestinian men. When the few times when the camera was there, Al Jazeera, these few times you see, and he was hitting it right on the head. He's like, where's the world at now? Where's the civilized world at now? Where's the West at now? Where's the civilized West at now? Where's democracy at now? You know, why Biden won't call for a ceasefire? And then, I be careful here, but you know, the so-called, well, you may get the feeling that the majority of the people about a ceasefire, but their CEO is on some other shit. So I can't wait the voting season come around. I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that. You know, I'm going to grab my sandwich and my cold drink, kick back and watch that unfold. And you see black people, the black caucus and all these individuals, whatnot. You see, and again, I'm telling my comrades, I said, man, the women, you know, somebody remind me of you it's so patriarchal when you say, you know, man, you know, having the balls to stand up, but you know, we're having the breasts and the balls, you know, and you see the women, you know, a little group they call the squad, you know, and where they at now? Where Cory Booker? Where they at now? All the old Negro here. Where they at now? Where they at now? Where's all these black intellectuals, these talented individuals? Where they at now? Now, Lamont Hill, I think his last name, Hall or Hill, he's been hired by Al Jazeera, by CNN, because he, like my grandfather said, he got too big for his britches. So now he's finding him a nice little niche at Al Jazeera. So he brought on a guest, and I can't think of his name. But they talked about the whole thing, you know, and they put it on the tape. And the mind went straight to their UN Accords. And he asked them, he said, which one are you talking about? Which specific, you know, plank you talking about in the UN? Which one? He couldn't answer the question. And so there's been these protests and these rallies all around the country. There's even been some clashes. Now, I understand it from a certain perspective. These clashes, some of them don't even fully understand. It's broken out into sheer tribalism. Now, from the biblical perspective, and I want to say this here to go to show you the farce in the whole shit. According to the Bible, if we lean on the Bible. Well, we take time. If we lean on the Bible and come from the, you know, the so-called table nation, Genesis, you know, and Adam, you know, and whatnot, Eve, and Noah and his sons, Ham, Yafet, and Shem, and well, you got two groups of cousins that fight. They're supposed to be cousins by name, by title, by label. It's supposed to be cousins. It's supposed to be cut. So what gives? Ain't nobody trying to hear that cousin shit. Ain't nobody trying to hear none of that Bible shit. Ain't got nothing to do with it. Period. Got nothing to do with it. There's no way in the world you can expect a group of people to stay the way that they are after they have been terrorized. And then the minute they seek to extricate themselves from the conditions that they're in, they become the terrorists. The same thing as I said about the so-called Indians had become savages. And the old thing about it takes one to know one. You know, but it's amazing to see how they spin it, you know, use some propaganda. And the world, like they will have us believe, is standing by, allowing it. Now, let's correct that. Because anytime these capitalists get in the news and talk about the world, this, that, and the other, like Kansas City Chiefs, they only play teams here in America, and they call them the world champs. Whoever won the NBA championship, right, Denver, they only played teams right here in America, call them the world champs. So is the world really this way or that way? You know, black and brown people around the world, how do they feel? What do they think about? Now, this whole thing, has to have a climax to it. And we're living in those times now. demonstrations and whatnot, Free Palestine, right, pro-Palestinian demonstrations and stuff. Groups or organizations will organize these rallies. Here where we are in the South, we've seen them. Me and a couple of comrades, you know, we went out, you know, just to get a whiff of it. And there was a whole lot of young people. You know, I guess young Palestinian people, you know, but there's a lot of youth, you know, like teenagers, you know. It's a quite a predicament. You go into the college campus and you see how the students have to pretend, you know, that everything's cool. You know, you won't say nothing, I won't say nothing. You know, the Muslim population, some of them been walking around on pins and needles. You know, come here, you know, with America, and they trying to make it. You know, they trying to. They've been told that this is democracy, this is a free world. You know, that they've left their countries, dictatorships and regimes and all this kind of stuff. And the same Machiavellian strategies have been used in their countries. They've been using the same shit in Palestine now. The same strategy. You know, the exploitation of Hamas itself. You know, that's like to sit back and say, okay, look, we gonna entice them. And people, you know, think you're making this shit up. You have no idea how it really works. You have no idea, you know. And black people, you sit back and we watch it. We have to have a clear position on this here. You know, I said earlier about allies. You know, our great elder, who no longer with the John Henry Clark, had did a speech. And he had said that we don't have any friends, you know. And when you think about it, you have to ask yourself, does that hold to scrutiny, right? Historically, black people have been in the same situation the Palestinian people find themselves today, in Gaza. All types of human rights violations that we still suffer from at the hands of the PIG, which is an extension of arm of the state, whose basic purpose and role is to protect the property class, the white ruling class, patriarchal establishment. And it just spread its tentacles all around the earth. It's even pitted the poorer whites against them due to their selfish ambitions and exploitation of the labor class. And this is why you have the socialist organizations, the communists, and Marxist-Leninist perspective. They were able to dissect the nature of capitalism and see the inherent contradictions in it, and have set themselves to oppose it through the revolutionary proletarian struggle. And like Chairman Ferguson said, I am the people, I'm not the pig. I'm a proletarian, I'm not the pig. No. And so black people need to be very clear on our position. You know, how we going to rock, how we going to get down. You know, I just wanted to say that for the record. So we be very clear. You know, we as People's Political Party, we see the Palestinian people as the latest victims in the out and open war, you know, a military campaign. You know, and that the other side of it is quasi-religious. You know, that the Judeo-Christian faction alliance has been at it for a long time. You know, similar to the faction factionalism that took place in with the Irish and the British. You know, the Protestants against the Catholics. You know, but that's the other factor of it. You know, the submission of the Islamic people to the Western ideal, and they're all connected. And when you look at the Muslim population in the so-called Near East, and we look at it, so okay, where's the solidarity? Where's the, you know, the Arabic people have always, band together. You know, they have a historical legacy. Band together, whether the imperialists is in Iraq, whether in Iran, they'll take Iraq and Iran and pit them against each other. But like you see Saudi Arabia, you know, the things that are happening, you know, in relation to them and how the whole geopolitical landscape is taking place. You know, the countries that have amassed the same weaponry as America, and how Israel has in essence violated nuclear accords, you know, and this secret nuclear program that was exposed, and what did they do to the person that did expose them? They kidnapped them. You know, the murder of Iranian scientists, nuclear physicists, because they want to have the same weight that America has. You know, the same weight that the Russians got, same weight that North Korea got. But when it comes to those nations, those are dictatorships. Those are regimes. And this is how it's playing out in the Clash of Civilizations book. What does it say? Written by Samuel P. Huntington. They have these old white men. Kissinger, Brzezinski, Samuel P. Huntington wrote a book called Clash of Civilizations. The book, in essence, just simply says the West against the rest. I can't make this shit up. Read. The West against the rest. But the rest got to be clear on our relationship. I had goals off to Gaddafi for what he tried to do and was doing for the continent of Africa. And if there has to be some solidarity or be called allies, then there has to be some reciprocity. So we seek more power to the Palestinian people, who will find themselves in a pitched battle for their lives. And we full well understand and know the fear of what that's like, to be dominated by minority people, no different than the whites who still dominate Southern Africa, 12-13% of the population, and dominate the rest of the non-white population of Southern Africa, and control the power. So there's so many things, so many ways that we can look at it, you know, and the real ways we can look at it. And I want to say just scratching the surface, but I think I went past scratching the surface, you know. But black people should take a look at it and realize that we hold some cards, and that the state, if it comes down to it, because they're getting desperate, because they're in the crisis, the capitalists are in the crisis. And when it comes down to it, they're going to be handing out concessions to keep black people with them. They keep telling us that we live in the greatest country in the world, even though it has the highest incarceration rate in the world. And most of those are black and brown people. And we see Palestine, Gaza, as the largest open-air concentration camp in the world, who have been put in the position of powerlessness. What they had done the Palestinian workers, no different than what they did kidnapping Iraqis and bringing them to Abu Ghraib or Gitmo. No different. Being held with no due process. What they was being charged with, Lord knows. So they could never represent a true democracy. It is a farce. They have their own definition of democracy. And that democracy is white world supremacy. And that's what it is. Clear as night is today. And inside of that, you have classism, sexism, racism, anti-Muslim, religious hate, and I ain't even got around to what a Semite is and what is anti-Semitism. A Semite is no more or less than somebody who speaks a so-called Semitic language. There is no Semitic race. And Whoopi Goldberg actually got it right. But look what they made her do. Nigga, if you want to keep that nice house and that bank account, you had better get back in there and say that it wasn't two groups of whites who was beefing during World War II, or one group of whites seeking to annihilate another group of whites because they was in a power position. No. They said, you better change that story. And what did she do? She acquiesced. But she actually got it right. So we wanted to have our say on the Palestinian situation. And it's going to balloon. So when I know we in, we say all power to the people in general, black power to black people. Stay tuned next week, 7 p.m., 8 p.m. Eastern, for another political education class in defense of the people radio, brought to you by People's Political Party. I'm one of your hosts, Chairman Nat, and our other host, Brother Motherland, our Minister of Defense, and our assault technician, who I like to refer to as, on the ones and twos, our sister, Amin Oshuns, our National Minister of Communication. And I will be black, like Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad used to say. Next week, we out of here.